welcome to the next episode of Shutter Speed. I'm here in Seattle with Art Wolf. Art, thanks for being on Shutter Speed.
It's my pleasure.
So this is a new digital photography show for Channel 10. We're trying to help digital photography enthusiasts better understand their hardware and so they can take better photos and then give them some insight into the world of professional photographers such as yourself. So thank you for allowing us to come into your gallery.
You're more than welcome.
The first question I want to ask is you're best known for your wildlife and nature photography. How did you decide, or when did you decide that was the path you wanted to go down, as opposed to perhaps, I don't know, portraits or architecture?
I think that's a great question, and the answer is, I started off in 1977, right out of college, and I had no idea I was heading towards a career in photography. I just knew I didn't want to work in any kind of job other than being outdoors, so upon graduating from the University of Washington, I started climbing and hiking and eventually taking photos. I was actually trained as a painter. And back in 77, I was very interested in wildlife, and I spent most of my pastime looking for critters, you know, from bears in the Cascades to geese up in the Skagit Flats. And as I progressed, I kept going further and further afield. Eventually, within a year, in fact, I went to Alaska, and things started opening up. It was such an easy place to find grizzly bears and bald eagles and all the great animals that live here in North America, and I was hooked. Then the challenge was how to make that passion a profession. And there weren't that many wildlife photographers back then. There was there were films being done on wildlife, but not stills. Or so I didn't really, wasn't aware of that. And so that was a logical way of entering the field of photography and maybe getting work published in various magazines. But all along the way, I never really thought this is a lifelong career being a wildlife photographer, because I was interested in traveling and seeing the world, which encompassed cultures and, you know, antiquity in Europe. And I never visualized myself as being exclusively nature and wildlife. But the brand that I created, the connection with wildlife, was really strong even to this day. And yet, if you walk through this gallery, you will see a lot of cultural portraits and a lot of urban landscapes. And so that's really what I love to do, is take wildlife, nature landscapes, cultures, and even an old building in Europe would be of intrigue to me, as long as I can frame it in good composition and good light.
Okay, so you've got a television show running at the moment on it's PBS here in America.
It's not only in North America, but now it's getting into South America. Al Jazeera TV picked it up for their channel. So as far as we're concerned, North America is the start, and we're going to go across the planet with the show.
And in the show, it's literally a camera crew following around you on your travels while you take photos. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, it's exactly that. I'm taking the crew back to places I've traveled over the last 30 years, places that I know could deliver a great story. And one week we could be crossing the Sahara, the next week floating down the Amazon, the next week literally crossing a pass in the high Himalaya. And every week it's either cultures or landscapes or wildlife. So it encompasses my real broad spectrum of photography and with a crew in tow. So what's not to like about that? I think it's a great adventure, and the show is picking up interest and people are starting to really pay attention to it.
That's fantastic. Now, I saw a statistic on your website that said that you a little while ago, took an estimated guess, you've taken over a million photos. The question I want to ask is, how many countries do you think you've visited along your travels across the years?
You know, I'm a birder, but I don't know how many birds I've seen. I don't collect statistics. I know that I've traveled to over 50 countries, which
Wow.
is pretty small compared to world travelers that really want to be in every place on Earth. I've
Yeah.
gone back to Antarctica 8 times. I've been to Africa 25 times. So I keep going back to places where the photos exist.
Do the animals kind of get to know you and they're like, oh, Art's back?
Certainly tribes have.
Oh, really?
I mean, some do remember because I've been there 2 or 3 years ago and they say, oh, my God, here comes a knowing guy with the camera again. But, yeah, with wildlife, no, they don't get used to me because, you know, it may be 5 years in between, you know, when I've been to Antarctica, for instance. But the point I'm trying to make is that world travelers that are into collecting countries will go to every place.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go there unless I know I can get something, you know, photographically speaking. So, but it's probably around 60 to 70 countries at this point.
So when we spoke to Phil Borges on the previous episode, he has a charity which you're on the board of, Bridges to Understanding, where he's basically taken the medium of photography and he's extended it into humanitarian work and kind of dealing with cultures and communities, and it's fantastic. Now, you're very much an environmentalist, I should say. How do you use photography, or how can photography be an important medium for helping preserve the environment, cultures, and keeping the world healthy?
I'm not a writer, I'm not an author, but I do believe the expression of photos worth a thousand words is really belies the power of the image. I think humans are visual animals. Mm-hmm. And if you can get one salient, really strong, emotionally impact photo, entire campaigns can be built around that, saving an environment or a species or even cultures. And yes, I really love the work that Phil is doing. And on my end, we support a number of the top environmental organizations around the world, from SCI, Conservation International. They even have a connection to our TV show. And in fact, we travel in at least one or two episodes each year with Russ Mittermeier, who's the president of CI. So that's a great venue for them to get exposure into a much broader audience than mailing, you know, brochures or even having a magazine. TV connects with people. And if you can take people out to a threatened environment or photograph an endangered species, it becomes very immediate to people. Mm. On the still front, we've been doing that for 30 years. You know, every organization you can name, we've supported. We've provided photos, in many cases, free of charge to them. If they demonstrate they're going to use those photos, they're real iconic issues. We've done fundraisers for everybody from Earth Justice. And, you know, all these organizations are erstwhile and they're doing good work. And so if my work helps them further their agenda, I'm all for it.
And did you, when you kind of started down the path, you said you started as a painter and then you loved traveling and photography kind of came along. At what point did you think that your photography may be able to have an actual impact on, you know, conservation and helping the environment and cultures around the world?
I think initially, like everybody else, you know, you're just trying to find yourself. You know, I was probably photographing subjects for 5 years before I actually step back and say, well, maybe this is actually an occupation.
Mm. I can take a good photo.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't even say it in those words, but I certainly didn't even think about, I was just trying to stay off the getting a real job and getting in an office and commuting like a lot of people. And the more I worked, and I, with everything I do, I jump in with both feet and I commit 7 days a week, and that's just the way I am. And so, yeah, suddenly I realize I'm actually making a living from this. This is perhaps my future. Mm. And I think my career has never been meteoric. It's just been a steady incline upwards, and it continues to be. And I've built a business and probably a reputation on solid performance over, you know, 30 years. And so nothing's meteoric and nothing, you know, is a flash in the pan. It's just solid groundwork and building upon that. I take as much pride with the fact that I've got a business where I am supported and I support 9 other individuals. And now with the TV show, that's extended into 5 other individuals on production and editing. And it's just a great feeling to think that your initial interest in photographing perhaps a flower in the neighborhood woodlot or a little bird on a branch would build into an organization that's recognized across the country and, in fact, around the world now.
That's great. Now, how do you split your time with digital versus analog, you know, film versus digital cameras? Do you have a preference? Do you kind of look at the subject and then kind of decide which camera to use from there, or are you all one medium?
Well, it's interesting. I waited until my technical friends that are photographers told me now that the digital is on par with film. And that's when I bought my first camera. And I can remember it very clearly. I took my film camera and all my film and a digital camera with a couple of little flashcards, and I went off to Antarctica. And on the trip across the Drake passage. I took the digital camera out because there wasn't anything.
What camera was that?
Oh, God. I think it was a 12-megapixel camera.
Okay.
See, I'm not a technical guy.
Okay, yeah.
And they all sound alike, quite honestly. A Canon 1DS something or the other. But at any rate, the point is there wasn't any great shots, so I can, you know, afford to take bad shots with the digital. And I got up on the deck of this boat crossing the Drake Passage, and it was a little bit turbulent, and I took my first picture. I looked at it, put on my glasses, and really looked at it, and I thought, well, that's kind of fun. And then I took a couple, and I never at that point have shot a single slide film. I have never shot another analog capture.
Okay, wow.
It was just that abrupt. I think the immediacy of verifying what you're getting, it was absolutely was made to order for people like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want gratification instantly. We want to see your results instantly. Mm-hmm. And it's the joy of photography. Seeing it really fast and fresh is really intoxicating.
I was at a little while ago back in Australia at a family gathering, and someone had one of the little disposable film cameras, and a little child was there and took a photo with the disposable film camera and wanted to look behind it to see the photo and was just... aghast the fact that you couldn't actually get a little digital readout of what that photo was taken. And I mean, that's, I think, a different generational gap now.
Oh, no. And another way of looking at it, too, is I was in the Sistine Chapel in November, and you're not supposed to take pictures. And I had my camera, and, the guards in that chapel are watching you like hawks to see if you try to take a picture. They're trying to control content right there.
Yeah.
And yet everybody was holding their phones up shooting the ceiling. And there was so many of them, guards couldn't even control it. And so the whole way people are capturing images has drastically changed. But for the better, because more and more people are into photography. And, I teach classes now, and we have instructors coming in from around the country and teaching various components of Lightroom or Photoshop or whatever it may be. More people are finding photography of interest because it's easier to do.
Yeah. Do you have a camera phone on you?
Don't even walk around with a phone, quite honestly.
Maybe in 5 years' time.
I get so annoyed at airports when I see people talking on cell phones and I have to hear their life story that I just refuse to carry a cell phone. I have one in the car and I only receive messages. So, no, I don't have a cell phone nor a cell phone that's got a camera in it yet.
All right. Well, what we'd love to do is maybe wander around the gallery, look at some photos, and
sure.
You could let us know, maybe just a few shots, how you went about actually taking them technically.
I can do that.
What cameras did you use? How did you stitch them together? What was the workflow? That
sure.
Kind of stuff.
Okay.
All right. Let's get to it.
Let's go. This has an interesting story. These are cormorant fishermen along the River Lee in China. And it's a very famous scene because I've seen a number of my colleagues get shots of these fishermen. I was there in early 1985 when it wasn't so discovered. I went back years later after I had digital, and I had this idea of photographing these fishermen illuminated by the lanterns that they use. Basically, the story is these fishermen will go out on the river in the evening, and they will use lanterns to attract fish. They put the cormorants on a leash in the water. The cormorants catch the fish. They regurgitate the fish into a basket, and then they go out and do it again. It's quite an extraordinary tradition and such a cultural part of this part of China that I wanted to go and capture that. So I brought a camera along with a flash because I thought the lantern light isn't going to be sufficient to really illuminate the scene. So I turned on the flash, I took my first picture, and it completely overwhelmed the subtleties of the lantern light, even though I had the flash dialed down to where it was just a hint of light. So I knew then, right there, on the spot, that with that LCD in the back of the camera, I could verify whether I was getting what I wanted. If it had been film, I surely would have taken at least one roll of film with the flash and discovered a month later when I returned home that it wasn't doing what I wanted to do. Yet another reason that the digital and being able to verify really saves the day. This is one of my favorite photos. I call it Town Hall Meeting, simply because it was photographed in the Thar Desert of Rajasthan, India. And these women were sitting around talking, and I asked the interpreter, what are they talking about? And they were literally talking about how lazy their men are, how they just refuse to go out and tend to the herds of goats. So the women have to do all the cooking, all the food preparation, and also the goat herding. the men are kind of sitting around chewing betel nut or spitting in the desert. But in this particular case, the people in this region of the desert have this beautiful tradition of painting on their courtyard floors, on the walls. So you have all these beautiful abstract designs that are somewhat organic, and other ones are about animals. They also have this tradition of wearing beautiful fingernail polish and bright colors. It's in Rajasthan, and it's famous for the fabric and the traditions. And so I have these women sit around one of the designs that were in the courtyard, and I literally shot over their heads with a wide angle and just tried to make a very abstract shot of color, line, and texture. You know, I've long had a connection with wildlife photography, and in fact, it's such a strong association that I'm trying to do my best at breaking it. I've closed my gallery at REI. I've opened this gallery down here in South Seattle to allow for a broader spectrum of the work I'm interested in. And if there's a quintessential style that I'm after, it goes back to the days of painting at the University of Washington. I love shooting and I love painting more abstract representations of nature. And so on my way to a caribou herd, I might stop and look at the surface of ice along an Arctic river. And this is a shot simply of the depressions in the surface of the ice and how the wind-blown dust or sand that is often the case up in the Arctic in these harsh elements collects in the depressions. And suddenly, dirty ice is transformed into a Japanese woodblock painting. And I love that. I love revealing nature in a much more abstract way, and a way that people have to take a second and a third glance and see what I'm photographing. But shooting wildlife is exciting and thrilling, but it's not as creative as photographing nature in an abstract way as far as I'm concerned. So this is the type and the style of work I'm really motivated to have on the galleries here down in Seattle. And this is a more recent shot of a color capture off the Monterey coast, and shot with a very long exposure. This is about a five-minute exposure. And with the latest camera from Canon, I have to say, the noise is so reduced now that I can get away with very long exposures. And I love transforming the landscape into a very painterly way. You know, the ones that you don't see this with your naked eye. And so you are creating that through your technique of using the camera. And for those that still claim that photography is not an artistic expression, it's more documentary, you show shots that could not be done unless it's using an artistic style. And that's what this is going on here. I'm creating this look as opposed to simply being a journalist capturing the moment. I'm not capturing the moment. I'm capturing a very long expression of what was going on there. And to further that end, to further making a statement about how photography is an artistic expression, I've taken the color out and I've rendered it into black and white. And in today's world, you can do that effectively. So it's amazing what digital has, how it's transformed the way I work, and more importantly, the way I see. One of my favorite landscapes is the Olympic rainforest, because it's such a luxuriant, almost mystical landscape. You expect to see little elves and fairies running through the forest. One of the reasons it's so beautiful is the amount of rain and clouds that really bathe this environment. You've got these beautiful, graceful, broadleaf maples with curved branches laden with dripping moss and ferns, and it's a wonderful environment, and yet so often people go out there and they photograph in bright, sunny conditions, and it's a very difficult landscape to really capture in bright, sunny conditions. So when I teach classes and I demonstrate, on those rainy, drippy days, I use a tripod, I use longer exposures, but mostly I use the even light that comes with clouds, and it renders the very complex environment. I mean, look at this shot. There's probably 30 or 40 trunks. Under sun conditions, it would be impossible for the human eye to process all that information. It'd be confusing, distracting, and harsh-looking Soft light, soft environment, easy to capture. It's just a matter of using a tripod. And then the last little trick I do is I always crop out the sky, because if it's overcast, you got this bright light box above, and our eyes tend to go towards the brightest elements within a composition. And so I keep your eye really down into the depth of the composition by not showing the white sky above, which is just really above the branches in this particular case. Pretty easy capture, use the light. You know, traditionally I love taking photos with panoramic. I had a Fuji 6x17 panoramic. I've had a Hasselblad panoramic. I love the way a panoramic really hones your eye into the horizontal landscape in front of you. This is an image I photographed off my deck in West Seattle, and it ultimately became the cover of a book I did on Puget Sound. And I chose to make it a panoramic simply because there's no foreground. It all dropped away from my deck, and there was a lot of sky. And yet the content, the meat of the photo, is really the Olympic mountain range, the beautiful layering of clouds towards the horizon, and the texture in the water. So it was a perfect subject for a panoramic. What I did was simply shoot vertically 11 different images all the way across the entirety of the mountain range. Actually, it extended way beyond, and I had to make a choice what part of those 11 images was I going to eventually frame, and we chose to do the meat of the Olympics, which are the brothers and Constance on this western horizon, and that anchored the shot, as did the sun and the light coming through the clouds. So it was a good choice, I believe, to make it a panoramic. It was an easy stitching process, and voila, I'm no longer using the bigger Fuji 6x17. In the age of digital, I am traveling now with lighter equipment. I'm able to make 4x5s or panoramics stitching images together, which enables me to go with fewer camera systems. And, you know, let's be honest, in the age of international travel, where security is becoming more and more tighter, to have fewer cameras is the way to go. And without bringing 500 rolls of film on my back, I've got 10 little flashcards. Of course, I do bring a laptop along and some hard drives. One of my primary interests is to build a community of photographers, to not only have my office here, a gallery, but I've also put in a school where we bring in nationally recognized photographers that will talk about their work or talk about any field that they're experts in. I've got a frame shop here, so I can literally take a picture in the morning, and if we were really efficient, and we are, we could color profile it, we could print it, we could frame it, we could have it up on the wall. And in the past, of course, I'd have film and processing, I'd be waiting, then I'd take the film to a lab and have a print made, and then I'd take it to a frame shop. Now we've got that all in-house. But for me, what's really great about this whole path that I'm journeying down is I love bringing in old friends of mine that I've photographed with in the past. I'll have them teach workshops. And it's a great resource for the people interested in photography here in the Northwest. And I want them to feel comfortable coming by and take, you know, sitting in on a lecture. And a lot of these famous photographers, from Greg Gorman to Sam Abel to Robert Glenn Ketchum, they come in and I ask them just to talk the story of their lives. You know, tell the journey along the way. And we can put 80 people in this classroom. And I love those moments where these very well-respected icons of photography are talking about their lives. And at the end of which, we'll bring in some books and they can sign it. People can have some wine and cheese. It's a great evening. I personally enjoy it. It's happiest I am. This was literally 3 years ago, a cavernous cement room. And nothing was being utilized here. There was no plumbing. There was no electricity. It was an old warehouse. And it just absolutely drove me crazy every time I walked through this portion of this building to our office down the hall that this was not being utilized. We couldn't rent it out. Nobody wanted it. And so I got this idea of remodeling the gallery, downsizing the office, expanding the gallery, and also putting in this classroom. And I've had people like Jay Mizell come out here and announce that this is the finest work classroom on the West Coast, and I believe it is too. We've got the latest technology. It's really geared for about 12 students, and we're starting to fill the classes in about 30 workshops a year, which is exactly what I was hoping to do. And The other thing is that when a Jay Mizell or a Greg Gorman comes up and teaches a workshop, we always ask them to have one evening, like a Saturday night, where we'll roll all these tables out, put in 80 chairs, and that is when these folks really talk about their lives, their favorite moments, their favorite images, the interesting stories all along the way. And it's a great evening that is shared by the photographic community. So in this workstation, there's two PC computers that run a printer. And so a typical class would be Rick Holt will come in from Pennsylvania, and he'll teach the latest version of Lightroom. And he's methodical, he's slow, and every student will really stay with him. And we have a couple of assistants. And so for 12 students with an instructor and two assistants, everybody gets their attention. And at the end of the class, they get to print the results of what they've just been working on. So the classes are generally a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and break on midday on Sunday. And at the end of that, they've got to process everything they've learned. And to have longer classes, I think, would be onerous. But just for that time block, it really works out. And that's no different than if we have a Sam Abel come in and teach a workshop. He'll teach what he knows. He's not a technical person, but he's an artistic person, and he'll teach how he sees and convey that. He's an excellent teacher. So all these various famous people will come in and teach to their specific talent and what interests them. And so people will come in from other parts of the country, or we get a lot of people from the West Coast. And I just love the whole educational process. What I think is really cool is to be able to take a picture, take a digital capture, have Julie in our other room actually profile. Enrico is going to be profiling the digital captures in the future. And it'll be on the computer. The computer then talks to the printers. The printers will print out the print. I'm simplifying it because there's all these different processes. But the fact is that everything is being elevated. We're learning by the month how to do better prints. Rico over here in the corner, who's shy, is an expert framer. And it's so great to see an image that you've photographed presented well with beautiful light in a very nice situation. And I love that. That really speaks back to my early roots as an artist. And I was framing and cutting mats when I was 13 years old in junior high. And so I always loved the presentation. And that's how I honestly got established with REI, was to have framed pictures on the wall and people started purchasing it from their homes. And so I haven't really altered from that. I've just elevated the look. And I've brought in people that are far better at presenting my material than I was. So this is part of our business, is to have this frame shop and printing room, and it's drastically changed. You know, the technology constantly changes the way we do things these days, and I love it. It's all exciting. A lot of people always are a little worried about the changing technology, but I embrace it because in every case, it's always resulted in a step up. And that's what I'm always about. This is one of my famous images. I should say notorious images. It's of a herd of zebras coming to the Mara River in Kenya. And I was working on a book called Migrations. And it was a book about swarms of bees, flocks of birds, school of fish, herds of animals. And not just that, but also how evenly they are, how strong a patterns they were. The whole book was inspired by M.C. Escher. And so in the introduction, I say this is a book inspired by a great artist. And to that end, I am now for the first time incorporating the digital technology. And in some cases, we have digitally combined elements, as clear as we could state in the introduction. But when this hit the market, it raised the ire of very purist nature photographers from around the world. And so on a daily level, I was being interviewed by newspapers, by magazines from around the world. In one case, I was condemned by photographers. In the other case, I was getting awards from designers. So it was like stepping into two distinct worlds with the digital image. And I think the argument has largely gone away, although I've always championed identifying which images have been altered or not. But they wanted me to go beyond that. They wanted diagrams. And then it would become a book on how-to as opposed to an art book. So I don't think we could have ever satisfied everybody. It was an interesting process. This was probably 12 years ago. And, you know, I doubt if the controversy would have arisen today. You know, people have evolved, I would say. And every time there's been a change from painting to photography, from black and white to color, from color film to digital, there's always been these angst periods that unrattle people. And I've always embraced change. You know, I'm a product of an art school where I would have these old instructors, famous instructors, always talking about creating and never staying the same. And so I've embraced that with the work I do in photography. So it was not even a mental challenge for me to use digital. I just wanted to wait for the digital to be on par with film. And of course, at this point, it's surpassed it a long time ago. So this is where most of the digital files are, and also the analog. This is where all the slides reside. And we've got some plans to use these slides to scan them on a major way in the future. We just don't have the manpower quite yet. But this is where I do a lot of work on the computer and organizing my files. And back here, we have some enslaved people working on the computer. So, you know, it's really a different kind of business on how we use the image as opposed to filing slides and pulling slides and sending them. You know, we're electronically sending them, we're working on them, profiling them for magazines, books, TV shows, and the website. So it's really a changed landscape, and I love it.
Wow.
Look at this. I mean, look at all these files. You know, the top files are about wildlife, and it goes from alligators to zebras. Second set is landscapes from Australia to Zimbabwe, and so forth and so on. As long as we know how to get to a slide that I've taken over the last 30 years, we still can. It probably only takes us a couple of minutes to find anything, any image that I've ever photographed. So it's great to have a good memory of what I've shot, but boy, this is the old technology, and all these slides are eventually going to be scanned, or at least the best of the best will be scanned, and we'll get that out. It's just a matter of timing and manpower, but it's part of the future.
All right, Art. Well, thank you very much for your time today and inviting us into your gallery and giving us an insight into some of your photos and your art. Where can we go for more information about your gallery, about your classes, about the communities that you support and your charities, and just more information about you?
Well, certainly there's links to the charities that we support within our website. We've got travelstotheedge.com, which is the TV show, links back to our home site, which is www.artwolf.com.
And you're Art Wolf with an E on the end.
I am. And, you know, it's going to be amazing. In this calendar year, we're going to completely rebuild our website and make it more dazzling. It's right now, it's got a lot of information, and it's a solid website, but things are changing, and that's what I'm about.
All right. Well, we hope to see you at the Pro Photo Summit, maybe one more time on an episode of Shutter Speed at a later date.
Absolutely. Come back. I'll talk to you.
Thanks very much.